You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
In the beginning, there was darkness. Then, out of the void, came fire, smoke, Roto. Fantasy excellence begins here.
This is your time.
The Roto Experts in the Morning starts now.
Welcome to the Roto Experts in the Morning, the game day edition. Yes, technically there's no games that are on the line today. They count for much more than some fantasy projections and fantasy talk, but this will be the new setup for you each and every Sunday during the season. I'm Mike Blewett. I'm here along with Joe Pisapi, and Scott Engel should be joining us shortly. That is the three-man team that will bring you the setup really for each and every Sunday here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So thank you for listening and thank you for joining us. Joe, it's good to have you. You and I have not done any shows together as of yet, but this is a nice little dry run before the season starts in a couple of weeks.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you very much, Mike, for the nice introduction. And I'm here, and it's funny, you know, I'm like the afternoon guy, I'm the night guy, and here I am, ready to rock and roll in seven. Where's Scott Engel? That's what I want to know. Where is he?
We got to get you on a regular schedule. We can't have you doing mornings and evenings and afternoons. You're all over the place.
I do whatever they need. Yeah. I do whatever they need.
You're a jack of all trades. I can appreciate that. A lot of versatility. You're the third down back of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So if you want to reach out to us today, please do that. At Fantasy Sports Radio on Twitter, it's at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. Joe is at Joe Pisapia 17, and Scott is at Scott E. Roto X. And again, Scott will be with us shortly. So I will start the festivities by saying that we had a lot of game action last night. So I don't know exactly how much we can glean from all of these games, Joe, but there certainly was a lot of action last night, and it's the third preseason game, the one that we call the dress rehearsal. So we saw some big highlights last night. Phil Rivers looked the part last night, 6 of 6, 75 yards and a score. He hit a nice touchdown pass to Travis Benjamin going across the middle. So Phil Rivers, midseason form, he did that drive and he was done. He had three drives this preseason. All three were touchdowns.
Yeah, conversely, and look, Rivers is one of my favorite quarterbacks. You know, I love Rivers. So it's always good to see him be good. Fortunately, you get to see, you know, Williams in any action. But, you know, I think everybody just knows his role there is going to be the number two. But very heartwarming, I should say, to a Rivers owner to see Rivers just continue to be himself and do what he does out there.
Yeah, on the flip side, Jared Goff did not look the part. He bounced back, but they were in the midst of a touchdown drive early. He gets strip sacked, and Melvin Ingram takes it back for a score. The next drive out, he throws the worst pass I've ever seen, and it fluttered into an interception. So that was the start of Jared Goff's night.
Yeah, and look, there's going to be continued ups and downs for him. There's going to be moments, I think, where Goff looks good and moments where, well, it looks like you're talking about right there. So I think with Goff, it's a matter of patience for the organization to find out this year if he is who they think he is under McVay, or it's going to be time to start looking again in 2018.
Yeah, we'll talk about that game and more after the break. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning, the game day edition. We'll be back after this. On the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network here until 9 o'clock. So a lot of game action happened yesterday. We previewed a little bit, Joe and I did, before the break regarding Phil Rivers' play and Jared Goff's play. And Joe, here's the one thing I'll say about the Chargers. I have basically since draft time and since they started rebuilding this team during the offseason, I've thought the Chargers could resemble New Orleans West, where they're going to throw the ball a lot. And obviously, that makes it really valuable for Melvin Gordon, too. So I just want to get your thoughts first on how you see the Charger. And they've played really well, the offense, the first team offense. And Melvin Gordon looked good last night. Phil Rivers has been nearly perfect. So give me your thoughts on how you expect this to play out across the entire offense.
Well, I like what you're saying there about New Orleans West, and they very well could be. And look, when you have an offense, I think, from a fantasy standpoint, like the Chargers and Phillip Rivers, where, you know, even though Gordon's there and Gordon had a ton of touchdowns last year and he was a very good fantasy force, everybody loved Gordon, Rivers is still the guy there. Rivers is still the man. He's still going to be this pass-heavy offense over there, and he's going to be leading the charge, no pun intended. And I think that's what you want out of him, and which is why I keep saying in those single quarterback leagues, you know, unless there's some sort of odd penalty for interceptions, because we do know sometimes he likes to get a little wild out there, yeah, and he's a bit of a gunslinger. Unless you are willing to, you know, risk that kind of problem, then Rivers is a great fade from the top of the board quarterback. And in two quarterback leagues, too, I've got him as my number two in a bunch, and I love it because I know the volume's going to be there. And as far as Gordon goes, look, last year my whole knock on him was I kept wondering, when is it going to end in terms of the touchdown dependency? And you know what? It didn't end. The guy kept finding the end zone. Now Woodhead is gone completely. He's not back here with the team this year. So for me, I think Gordon, it's clean sailing for him. I expect probably a little less touchdown just because it was such a high total last year, but still going to be a very solid back. Rivers, you know what you're going to get out of him. I'm looking for a Keenan Allen bounce back. I love the Chargers offense.
So what I would say about what's interesting about all of it is Phil Rivers, we'll take him first. He's ranked, according to Fantasy Pros, as the 14th quarterback. And Joe just mentioned he had him as a QB2, which is incredible because he is amongst that QB2 conversation. So anybody ranked after 12, he has really serious potential to push for that top six or seven. Now you could also argue, by the way, the difference last year between the 7th best quarterback and the 15th best quarterback in fantasy football was about 20 points. So, Joe, to your point, you can wait all day. You take Phil Rivers conceivably in the top 14 quarterbacks. Let's say it goes according to the rankings, and he could be as high as 7.
Yeah. Well, in the Fantasy Black Book, I have him as a 1 because longevity matters to me. Consistency matters to me. So I actually have him ranked there barely in that grouping. And the point that you're making is the most important one, Mike, and that is how much separates these guys. So when there's barely any separation, there's barely any advantage that should be gained or relative position value there, which is what the Black Book does, I'm telling you, that's exactly the point. And why would you dare waste draft capital on a higher end quarterback that you think is a higher end quarterback is going to bring you advantage, and it's going to turn out that they're not? It's going to turn out that they're actually a negative in terms of fantasy league value. And I'm talking about a lot of the guys who everybody else really likes this year. I mean, I love Jameis Winston, but he's still a negative in that impact. He's still below the fantasy league average. Mariota, as good as he was last year as a quarterback one, was still slightly below. Now, not a lot. It's all single digits. But because there's no advantage to be gained in a single quarterback league for where you have to draft Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, you're missing out on crucial wide receiver and running back depth and elite level depth at that point. So it's just a bad, bad way to start your fantasy league.
And there's plenty of guys out there that I'm not denigrating them in any way, but whether it's Kirk Cousins or Marcus Mariota, Jameis, as you just mentioned, Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger, Derek Carr, Dak Prescott, a lot of those guys have some level of warts. I think they're all going to be very productive. But frankly, in many instances, I'm going to wait and take Phil Rivers. Now, I've got Roethlisberger a couple of times because I got him at a really good value in QB2 leagues and other formats. So I was happy to take him when I took him. But Phil Rivers is the guy that goes later that I really want. Now, back to the Chargers as a whole. What's interesting about this team is that you have Anthony Lynn as the new head coach there. He obviously likes to run the ball. He did so in Buffalo. He did so when he was a coordinator level in New York. And now he actually kept on Kent Wisenhunt because he works so well with Phil Rivers. So they have a lot of firepower there from as a coaching unit and guys that know how to run the ball well, i.e. Gordon, and pass the ball well through Rivers and all of these other options.
Yeah, and people forget, too, the defense played better than people remember, I think, last year, too. So the Chargers are a team that I think is going to be way more competitive, and they were very competitive in a lot of games last year. They had a lot of bad bounces, a lot of late losses. So, you know, when I'm looking at this Chargers team, I definitely agree with you. I think it's always great when a coach can acknowledge, you know, even when they take over a situation that, you know, you don't need to always get rid of everybody. Sometimes if certain things are working or there's a comfortability factor there that you want to keep that going, you want to keep that rhythm going. But I think that this Charger team is certainly going to be competitive. I love the pieces they have. It's funny because heading into the season, it was the rookie Williams that people were starting to concern themselves in fantasy-wise, and then his injury has taken him out of the equation, which has really allowed Ty Williams to just go back into that role, and you know, nobody's going to be wasting too high of a draft capital on Mike Williams. And I again keep going back to Keenan Allen, Mike, because for me, Keenan Allen is such an extraordinary PPR talent. You know he has the potential to put up enormous points. I understand. I was a Keenan Allen owner last year. It sucked. It was brutal. You saw that quarter and you go, my God, this is going to be a great year. And it all came crashing down in the same half. And it's brutal. And it's 2 years in a row. And I get it. But for where Keenan Allen's going right now, you'd be a fool right now not to take a risk in some shares, in some way, on Keenan Allen, because the upside there is just so huge where you can get him.
So I have two drafts to go, maybe three, and I don't have Allen yet, but I'm with you. And look, I was a Keenan Allen owner the last 2 years. So I trust me.
So you're really brutal. This is really tough for you. Shame on you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. But there are certain players that you just have an affinity for. I think we can all admit that. You're always going to have your favorites and the guys that you don't like so much. You know, I'm going to go after Keenan Allen in one of these upcoming drafts, and I will probably have him this year. I'm not that scared of him. Yes, it is a big concern, but he has had exactly 12 months to come back. We saw what Jordy Nelson did last year, basically coming back, I'd call it 13 months or so after the ACL. It wasn't exactly a slow start, and it certainly was an unbelievable campaign for him. So that's it on the Chargers. To your point, Joe, he went 5 catches for 45 yards last night, so he did get in the mix. Williams wasn't really targeted. I don't even know if he was on the field. I did watch some of that game, but I was flipping back and forth between Jets-Giants, which don't even get me started on the Jets situation.
They actually held him out of that game, actually.
Yeah, so makes sense.
You know, and look, you don't need to see it. You know, anybody who thinks you need to see it, you just don't. It's preseason. Just be happy you're not seeing your players carted off the field, okay? Let's not get too greedy here.
Yeah, agreed. So positive expectations for the Chargers, and we can continue to talk about that at a later time. But I'll focus on the Rams here. Look, I hate doing this to like Hackenberg and Goff, but it's going to happen. So Goff drives the team down. They're driving down the field on the Chargers, and he rolls out there. I think they're inside the 20. So they're probably on about the 15. And Joey Bosa came right at him. Not blindside. Yep. He came right at him, and not only did he pull up to make sure that he got the ball, but he like knocked it backwards. Goff didn't see it coming. Goff strip sacks it. And Melvin Gordon picks up the ball and runs 85 yards the other way for a touchdown. And it just concerned me because Goff looked like he didn't see it at all. Like there was no awareness that there was a guy in his face.
Well, and that's the whole thing. As you continue to learn the quarterback position in this league, I think that's what's going to come up for Goff too. You know, last year everybody wants to consider him a rookie, but with the lack of direction and coaching that you get from San Diego, from Los Angeles last year with Jeff Fisher and company. I mean, that's just a brutal group. And I almost feel like this is his true rookie year. You know, so I'm not giving him a complete pass for last year, but I still think there's going to be a lot more growing pains to come here for Goff. And McVay, I think, luckily, has a lot more of a positive potential impact on Goff. And yeah, you're right. These things are going to be a problem. The awareness in the pocket, right? The balance between, you know, understanding where the reads are and when to throw where and all these things at the NFL pace, that at least he's more concerned now with those things. And I think that's going to be positive. You know, it's another new playbook 2 years in a row. I think for Goff, I think we all have to just be a little bit calmer, let him make these mistakes in preseason. There's going to be plenty of mistakes in the regular season for Jared Goff. But when all said and done, let's give him a full year with a real coaching staff and real coordinators who actually understand offense. And let's see what he can do. And look, now you've got a real target in Sammy Watkins over there too, which is going to help Todd Gurley in that situation. So I'm not saying Goff is going to be all of a sudden a fantasy relevant quarterback. I'm just hoping he can hold the fort down to help out the value of guys like Gordon and Watkins.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I'm willing to give him a little bit more room, but he certainly needs the growth because he threw an interception. The Rams have fumbled the ball 8 times in 3 games, but there was no Gurley last night, no Watkins, almost nobody of fantasy value played. So come back, we'll talk Jets, Giants, and a few more games after the break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blute and Joe Pisapia. We're still missing Scott Engel, but I know he's going to join us at some point.
Well, I mean, I think we're fine.
He's here. It's a fair point.
Let's not ask for things, you know, that you can't control. You know, sometimes you got to take the blessings when they come, Mike Blewett. He's here. Are you listening there, Scott?
He's here in spirit, and we'll carry on. We'll carry on his spirit throughout the rest of the show. So
actually, now it sounds like a tribute show, like he died or something. Mike, easy, easy on that one.
He's all right. He's fine. He's alive and well, as far as we know, and he'll be here when he'll be here. So. You know, by the way, just a sidebar, did you watch the fight last night?
I did not watch the fight last night. I was in transit. I was doing TV for CBS in New York last night, and I was basically in that studio for a couple hours just doing stuff and recording with them. And then by the time I got out, you know, the fight was still going. So I was like reading on Twitter and, you know, I'm not always people was going to try to find the fake live streams of things. But, you know, going into this fight, I kept saying the same thing, which is Mayweather has everything to lose. Conor McGregor has nothing to lose, really. You know, the people who love him are always going to love him. And I think what happened there, what I can tell from everything that I've read now, coverage this morning about it, is I think people now on the boxing end or on the pro Mayweather end have a lot more respect for McGregor. And, you know, this is a boxing world. This is Mayweather's world. I don't think it's shocking that he has the W. What did you think about it, Mike?
I mean, I didn't watch the fight. I felt, honestly, I don't want to get on a soapbox, but I feel pretty uncomfortable about buying Floyd Mayweather fights, personally. Not to mention that they're typically boring. That's a sidebar. I just, you know,
well, that's I couldn't tell if it was a political stance for you, like a personal morale.
It is
one,
a little, or it if it was more, like a principle. It is more that than the money. You know, first of all, he has enough money. I don't need to donate another $100, but you know, Floyd's got some off the outside the ring stuff that I'm not really a huge fan of for obvious reasons. It seems like the fight was more interesting than people anticipated. It wasn't an early knockout kind of thing, and people were entertained. I was just curious if you got a chance to watch it. But, you know, it is what it is. Mayweather goes to 50-0 as anticipated, and he saved Vegas's bacon because there were some big bets on the upset with McGregor at some serious odds.
Yeah, there definitely was. And look, you know, I give McGregor a lot of credit, too, for, you know, going out there and playing on someone else's turf. I don't think that's the easiest thing. And it started off exactly how I said, you know, knowing what I do about fighting. I thought that it would be a little bit difficult for Mayweather at first to deal with McGregor the way he moves differently. MMA fighters just move differently than traditional boxers do. And I always think for a traditional boxer, even one as great as Mayweather, one that's as flawless, one that's as skilled as he is, there's that thing about the guy who is a little bit not like you're used to moving.
Yeah, an awkwardness
kind of
to
throwing
it.
You off. Yeah, and you know what? And it showed early on, and then Mayweather is able to make adjustments, and that seems to be, you know, what eventually won him the fight. And, you know, there's everyone's going to complain about this and the scorecard of that, and, you know, should the referee have let this happen or not? You know, that's what boxing is. It's the controversy. It's a soap opera. It's what it's always been. But, you know, I grew up watching the Hearns and Haglers, and I grew up watching all that, and to me, that's what boxing was. So, you know, at this point in the game, it's kind of everything just, nah, doesn't really excite me anymore.
Yeah, a little bit of more pomp and circumstance than anything else. But anyway, to turn back to the NFL and some of the games that happened last night, I think before we get into Jets-Giants, just want to do a couple of injury updates, and I want to get your thoughts on the Patriots in a moment. But Tyrod Taylor was diagnosed with a concussion last night early in Buffalo's game against Baltimore. So we're obviously in a concussion protocol right there. Nathan Peterman, the rookie out of Pittsburgh, did not play well in his absence, and he was likely to be the next man up. So we'll continue to monitor that. Broncos wide receiver Demaryius Thomas and quarterback Paxton Lynch did not return to the game against the Packers after suffering some minor injuries. It doesn't appear to be serious initially, but we will continue to monitor that. We'll get to Edelman and Ware in a moment as we continue to go down. Colts cornerback Vontae Davis did not return versus the Steelers. We'll see if that will be important because Davis ends up covering a lot of number one wideouts. So if you have guys going up against the Colts, you can expect bigger days out of them if Vontae Davis is not in the mix early. Right, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. Vontae Davis would be a huge blow for a team that's already going to be behind the eight ball, not having luck for a couple weeks. So, I mean, just injuries just continue to ravage this team. And It's a bad scene, man. It's a bad scene, Mike.
Yeah, so the first game that they're going to have is actually against the Rams, so that would be a Sammy Watkins matchup, potentially. Mm-hmm. You know, and you make a point about a team ravaged with injuries. There's a few teams every year, and I've said this to George Kurtz, who I do the Saturday show with, there's a few teams every year that seem to be snake-bitten, and we've seen a few of them already. Colts appear to be one, although we knew about the Luck surgery for a long time. The Dolphins have seen a lot of injuries. And the Ravens, again, have seen a lot of injuries. So there's those few teams that you start to get a really eerie feeling about. Like, how many guys are they going to lose before we even play a game that counts? You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. The Ravens, you know, they keep saying that Flacco's going to be out there. And if you watch Ryan Mallett play, I'm pretty sure that they'll be willing to prop Flacco up in one of those Hannibal Lecter type, you know, devices where he's all just strapped in and just give him a football just to get him on the field, because I swear if they have to put Ryan Mallett out there again, I think Harbaugh's going to have a coronary. But going back to that Davis injury too, the reason why that's a big potential problem for Indianapolis is if indeed it's Tolsien and if indeed it's going to be three and out and if indeed there's going to be more pressure on the defense, to have a weakened defense, having to go out there and spend more time without him, That's a huge blow, because it's not like Andrew Luck is out there and he's fine, he's healthy, and we're talking about an offense that's going to keep the defense on the field a lot more, and when you're missing a key part of your defense, this could really go south quickly for that team.
Very true. So that is some of the more significant injuries. Obviously, the other two that I mentioned in Edelman and Ware happened on Friday night. So we talked about it fairly extensively yesterday on this show. But I'd like to get Joe's opinion. Joe, you're a Pats fan, correct?
I am.
So obviously, it's a big blow. Julian Edelman is out for the year. So unfortunately, to those of you who drafted a little bit on the early side, it's really difficult to replace a guy like that in the PPR world. But the Pats, more so than any other team that we've ever seen, are very good at adapting and using different players to fulfill different roles. So with the loss of Edelman, how do you expect those 157 targets to be distributed?
Well, you know, it's funny, as a Pats fan, you have this inner calm about you at times, and it's come over the years because we've seen this. We've seen Gronk go down and then win Super Bowls. We've seen them lose big key players, key linemen, key defensive players, and they just keep plugging along. As long as number 12 is on the field, all is right with the world. And I think right now you're going to see immediately it'll be Danny Amendola will be the big beneficiary, and that's fine. Amendola, his problem is always durability. His problem is he's been a more effective player with the Patriots the last couple of years because his snap count isn't as high as it was in other places. So, you know, I don't think Amendola is going to be a guy who's just going to pick up the Edelman torch and he's going to be the new guy with 100-something catches. But it's going to increase his total the most because he fits the role of what Edelman does in the offense. Now, that being said, too, this surplus of running backs that people wanted to rail against all year, guess what? They're going to be a whole lot more active. You're going to see a lot more two running back sets. You're going to see some of those guys playing in the slot. If Burkhead played in the slot, it wouldn't shock me. If you see Deion Lewis line up in the slot, it would shock me. If you see James White line up in the slot, it wouldn't shock me. And I'll tell you why. You know, you go back and look at that Super Bowl and what a huge game White had. I think it's going to cause matchup problems for other defenses because the running backs typically are going to be faster anyway. And, you know, getting them over there outside, lining up and starting, as long as they can run good routes and work on that, and they've got a couple weeks now to figure it out before we get to in-season action. I think Brady and company will continue to be fine, and, you know, what an incredible thing to say about that organization, right, where they could lose a player like Edelman, and basically everyone's just sad, but they realize that the season's still way, way ahead, and they still got Hogan, they still got Cooks, they still got Gronk. I don't see any problems there, Mike.
Yeah, so we asked the question on yesterday's show. I'd like to get your opinion of it. Which of the following Patriots is the most reliable fantasy option? Now, I didn't put Cooks out there, or Gronk out there, and Brady, because those are easy. But of these four, which is the most reliable fantasy option? James White, Chris Hogan, Mike Gillisley, Danny Amendola.
You know, this is tricky. You know, it's funny. I would never have thought I'd say this, but I think at this point, at least in the early going, I think Amendola is going to be the big beneficiary. And I think it'll be easier for them to just plug him in there. I think he's the guy that I think is going to be the most reliable, believe it or not, on a weekly basis, because they will want to fill that Edelman role in the offense. I do think that. And it's funny, if you put Gronk in there, I don't know if I could say he's the most because of his injury past. So even if he was on the list, I don't know if I could say him.
No,
how about you? What was
true.
Your thought on that one?
So Hogan won 45%, but my personal opinion is that I think Hogan and Amendola will obviously see really big bumps, but the guy that I think is most reliable, and I'm talking PPR specifically, is James White, because last year he caught 60 passes, 551 yards, 5 touchdowns. He should have won Super Bowl MVP, but whatever. I'm done with that award. I've been done with that award for a long time. It's just, they just
I like how grumpy you are.
Yeah, it's
you
like,
don't
hey,
want to buy
the
Mayweather fight.
It's like he didn't
you know, like how they give out awards. I love it. Yeah, my kind of morning. Now I feel good.
George Kurtz is rubbing off on me. Old school fantasy.
That's what it is. Yeah, I spend nights with George on Black Book, so that's what it is.
Does he lighten up at nighttime?
Oh, no. It's more rage. It's open rage. It's awake rage. It's great. Oh, I love it.
George is a great analyst, but he likes very little.
I like him, so yeah, that's all that
I know,
matters.
Me too. Hopefully I'm in his good graces. But in any event, I just think, based on the fact that he caught 60 passes last year, couldn't you just see another 15 or so passes going to White with this loss? He can obviously line up in the slot there. He's done that before. I like him as a very reliable option. That's just sort of my thoughts. I concede that Hogan and even Amendola will see really big bumps in production, but I like James White to go from maybe 60 catches to about 75 catches, and that's a very serious PPR asset.
It is. It is. I can't disagree with that. I think White's going to be a huge part, but in the early going, I think they're going to keep it simple with Amendola until they can get White really comfortable in that receiver-type role.
We'll talk about Spencer Ware after the break. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's Mike and Joe this morning. There'll be no Scott Engel, I've been informed. The scheduling snafu on my part. He wasn't supposed to be here, apparently, so I messed it up. So, whatever. Scott will be here next week, Joe, and he'll be here every week for the rest of the year. So that's the important part. We're going to have a lot of the King here each and every Sunday, just not this Sunday.
Well, that's all right. You know, let Scott get his beauty rest. That's what I say.
Yes.
You know, give the man a little extra time to recoup. He's here so early all the time. Let him relax, you know, have his coffee or whatever.
Yeah,
let him watch old Seahawks reruns from 1985. Let him do all that.
Rewatch the Kenny Easley Hall of Fame induction speech on a loop.
Oh, gosh. I think you might have worn that one out already. He might have to go back to the Steve Largent one and see if he's got like a third copy of that, I think.
So in any event, Joe and I here until 9 o'clock, and we're breaking down the games from last night and obviously talking about some of the injuries that pop up. It's an unfortunate part that we have to talk about, but that's the reality of fantasy football. We're trying to figure out who the next man up is on a particular team and exactly how that can impact your fantasy world. So obviously Spencer Ware, we found out 2 injured ligaments in his knee. He's going to be out for a while, although they have not declared it a season-ending injury, and I have not seen anything yet related to surgery. But I think we know what that means, and it's that the guy that was going to likely win the starting job in rookie Kareem Hunt is now definitely going to be in the lead for that job. And we're in good shape there if you're a Kareem Hunt owner. He's ranked currently 30th on Fantasy Pros in PPR format, but I think that's very likely to creep up rapidly here over these last 2 weeks of drafts, Joe.
Well, this is one of the few situations where early drafting has helped you if you're a Kareem Hunt owner.
I am.
Because
in Scott Fishbowl, the industry league where, you know, many of us play in, I'm a Kareem Hunt owner, and that draft happened mid-July, basically.
Right. And Kareem Hunt certainly has ability, and I was very happy with the process of what they were doing. You know, Jake Seeley and I were talking about this on Target a couple weeks ago. We were talking about, do you like what's going on here with Hunt and the lack of touches from Ware? And I said, I'm not worried at all about the lack of touches from Ware. You know, this was 2 weeks ago. I said, just let him get to regular season. I think that's all that they wanted to do. Let's see what Hunt is. Let's give him more exposure, more time, so that if he is going to be the guy eventually, we feel comfortable with him in the offense, running with the ones and doing everything he's supposed to do. So it all should work out, right? And for me, I felt that that was the best scenario for Hunt, because you wanted him to not feel the pressure of saying, all right, kid, here you go. You're the guy now. So in a way, it's a great situation for Hunt owners now that Ware is out. But now you do have to see how he responds to the cushions gone. And not everybody responds well to that. I think it's a lot to ask of a rookie. You know, if he's going to be that guy going forward, that there's going to be moments where he's going to struggle at times as well. He'll struggle, I'm sure, picking up pass protection and a couple other things. But I think as long as Kareem Hunt continues to hold on to the football, if Kareem Hunt continues to show what he's shown us already in preseason, you've gotten a great value. Now, this weekend, if you got a draft today, you're going to have to pay a little more. Next weekend, probably even a little more as people continue to talk about them. So for Spencer Ware, I thought he was kind of not long for this world anyway. But look, now it's Kareem Hunt show, and we're going to see what happens here.
Matt Modica, who does Roto Experts in the morning from Monday to Friday, as well as Fantasy Football Frenzy and a couple of other shows, was literally in the middle of a draft, Joe. It was a slow draft, an NFFC online championship, where it was the middle of the sixth round. Edelman went with the fourth pick, got hurt, and Spencer Ware had gotten hurt right around the same time, and Modica was two picks away. So Ware and Edelman basically went back to back. Both got injured, or Edelman got injured, and Ware maybe was about to be picked by somebody. And he was waiting and waiting and waiting on Kareem Hunt, and he was able to snag him literally hours after the injury, maybe a couple of hours after the injury. The guy in between him and that pick picked Woodhead, and he scooped up Kareem Hunt, which is ironic because Matt has been on the Kareem Hunt bandwagon from the beginning, and now he's going to benefit greatly from the injury to Spencer Ware. So that's really – I mean, I don't know if you see any other – like with the Edelman situation, we see a lot of tentacles out of that injury, and it could be Edelman, it could be Hogan, it could be White, and how many more touches does Gronk get with – where it basically shifts to Hunt just getting a larger market share, don't we think?
Yeah, oh, absolutely it does. And it bodes well because his history in college, he never fumbled the ball in college. And that's the thing about rookie running backs. You see P. Ryan struggling with that, where the fumbles sneak in there and mentally, I think he had 700-plus rushing attempts in college, Hunt, without fumbling the football. that's impressive. That's an enormous – that's one of those things that, you know, will put you in the doghouse real fast as a rookie running back. Now, they're not going to have that luxury. Andy Reid and company are not going to have the luxury to put him in the doghouse. They're going to need him out there on the field without wear. And for fantasy purposes, you know they're going to want to run the football. I'm going to think they need to continue to run the football, too. This noise about, well, Macklin's gone, so that just means more for Kelsey and Tyreek Hill's automatically a wide receiver one. I'm not buying that narrative whatsoever. This is a team that still needs to run the football. I think Spencer Ware is a big blow to this team. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to, like, you know, take away from that. But Kareem Hunt, in fantasy terms, is certainly the more exciting back, certainly the guy who's more upside. If you're in, you know, rookie drafts or if you're in dynasty leagues right now, and you're a Kareem Hunt owner, I think this is, you're getting basically what you're expecting in 2018 right now. And I think that's a huge plus for your team in this situation.
Yeah, and Spencer Ware last year, to recap, he had 247 touches, and he had over 1,350 yards and five touchdowns. So it was a very productive year, especially considering where people, how, the manner in which people grabbed him. You know, certainly not a very high draft pick last year. Charcandrick West, he stepped into the action on Friday night after Ware went down and didn't do much. I think he will be the handcuff if you feel like you need it. Given the fact that he is a rookie, we could see him get a little bit more rest than your standard starting running backs. But, you know, frankly, with Jordan Howard and Zeke Elliott last year, you can dispel that notion pretty easily.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I actually went back while we were talking, and I'm watching more video of Hunt again. And, you know, the speed obviously is the one thing that pops you right away. But also, you know, I think he's got good vision. And I think that's something you say, well, what the hell is that? Well, what that is he sees the field, he sees the defense well. He sees where the holes are. He is a guy, too, it's very physical back. Even though he might not be one of the bigger backs that you've seen, he's physical, and I think that's something that bodes very well. He's got incredible burst off the line. He hits the hole. He hits it hard. He hits it fast. These are all things that bode very well, and it's funny because, you know, we've talked so much about Fournette on the network, and we know now the injury with him. Well, Mixon's gotten so much time. Dalvin Cook, because just me and Jake Seeley alone, I think, have talked up Dalvin Cook beyond belief. And then McCaffrey, and now you got the Williams boys and all this, and now Hunt thrust into this role. It's starting to shape up. Like, it could be an all-time great season for rookie running backs, and it's not usually the case. Rookie running backs tend to struggle. You got a lot. This is a weird draft class. This might be one of those, like, the quarterback draft class that had, you know, Marino and Elway and all those guys. Yeah, and it might be one of those all-time great draft classes. And we saw one for wide receivers a couple years ago when we had Evans and Odell Beckham and Benjamin.
You know what's funny about that draft? That year with the Odell and Benjamin and Landry, I believe, might have been in that draft too. Watkins was in that draft. I was on my soapbox that entire preseason talking about how rookie wide receivers usually don't pan out because they don't.
No, you're
I
right.
said it. I said it.
And
many,
running backs
many
are even
times.
Worse because they can't pick up the pass protection and nobody trusts them.
Right. So true. They're at risk of, you know, losing starts or losing playing time because of that. Rookie wide receivers, by and large, don't work out. It doesn't mean that they aren't fantasy assets, but people are waiting for the next Odell Beckham are probably going to be waiting a long time. It just so happens that year, by the end of that season, seven rookie wide receivers finished in the top 50 in PPR leagues, and one of whom was John Brown, which is the guy I wanted to talk about next. And John Brown, I had people literally in the last couple of days saying, is it time to punt on John Brown? And do I pick up J.J. Nelson or Jerron Brown? Well, last night, John Brown has two catches for 49 yards and two touchdowns, including one excellent highlight reel over-the-shoulder catch. Carson Palmer in sync with him. So your thoughts on John Brown this upcoming season, currently ranked 47th in PPR format. Well,
look, if you're talking about him down at 47th, you know, we're talking about a risk worth taking. Because all the guys down there between 40 and 50-something are all going to be risks in some level. That's why they're 40 to 50-something. That's they've earned this ranking. You know, and you know, anybody who wants to hate on John Brown, you have to realize the sickle cell thing is a very dangerous thing. That's a real thing. And he struggled with some other injuries, too, in his career. And it's inconsistencies at times, yes, but I mean, I look at John Brown and I see still potential. Now, I'll tell you what. Do I trust him weekly head-to-head? I don't know if I do. I think there I'm willing to take a flyer. It's a lottery pick as long as I don't have to pay for him. You know, he's fallen considerably in the last couple of weeks in most drafts, if you look at the fantasy football calculator, and that's where I feel comfortable taking him. Otherwise, he's more of a DFS GPP option because of the upside he brings and because the price will be right. So I think with players, it's especially knowing where you want to use him and what kind of format do they work best. It's tailoring the player to the format, you know, and I think we don't do enough of that. And I think that's where I like Brown the most. In season-long head-to-head, those inconsistencies and the injuries, unfortunately, I think do keep him down there for a reason. So just know what you're getting into. As a bonus, Mike, I love him as a bonus player. If you're relying on him, I think that you're in a bad spot.
Yeah, look, he can't be any more than a number three wide receiver as far as where he's drafted, and you'd probably be at the latter end of wide receiver three. He's going to get a little bit of a bump because of how he played last night and the two excellent touchdown catches, but I'm with Joe. I think that he's a risk worth taking, but I might want to have three other wide receivers that are more reliable first. You know what I mean? If I have a more reliable starting wide receiver set, and then John Brown's my bonus guy, he could probably double his production from last year. 39 catches, 517, two touchdowns last year. He missed parts of games. He missed all of games. I just think John Brown is the type of guy that, as Joe said, is worth the risk if you have some other solid guys in front of him. We'll talk about a little bit more about the Cardinals and the Falcons after this on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett and Joe Pisapia. I know I previewed Jets Giants earlier, but got off on a little bit of a tangent. And honestly,
but you were just putting it off. It's like the kid who has to eat his vegetables. You just didn't want to do it.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I kind of don't want to talk about Christian Hackenberg again. Bryce Petty actually threw three touchdowns and then got hurt. So good times. Christian Hackenberg was was terrible, and then Bryce Petty came in. He was awesome, and then Hackenberg came in and actually played all right. So, but they did lose, of course. It's the Jets.
Well, yeah.
So, one thing I did want to talk about, I wanted to continue on the Cardinals and Falcons game because we talked about John Brown, but the Carson Palmer thing, he actually has a pretty solid game there. He went 8 of 13 for 86. He threw the one touchdown. I made a mistake. Drew Stanton actually threw the other touchdown to John Brown. ground. So he had the two touchdowns, one from Stanton, one from Palmer. Your thoughts on Carson Palmer this year? He's a little bit of a hotly debated guy because he's not in the QB1 range, but some people expect him both in QB2 leagues or in leagues where you might want to roster a second quarterback, have expectations for him to have a bounce back season.
Yeah, I mean, at this point with the age and the fragility of Carson Palmer, I'm not buying that personally. I think of the two quarterback league and the Superflex, Carson Palmer is still a very viable number two. You know, I would say it's probably not where I'd like to end up being because of the age factor and because of the fragility. You have to take that into account. And I don't think you can also look at him as anywhere in that conversation too. If you're going to, you know, get Andrew Luck late in a draft, if that you could pull that off, and this is another thing we were discussing the other day, if you could actually do that, there's plenty of guys out there like Rivers you could pair him with, like Stafford, who are still, you know, younger, better possible situations too. And if Brown, you know, does miss more time and he is missing another weapon, I don't feel great about the Nelsons of the world. Fitzgerald, God bless him, he's an all-time, you know, great wide receiver. I love Fitzgerald, but as good as he was last year from a PPR standpoint, he went 11 straight games last year without a touchdown, Mike, and that's bad. That is not good from a fantasy perspective, especially if you're talking about, you know, where Carson Palmer is going to be. So I'm not buying him as a backup. I think there's other guys you can get. They're going to be more productive with a lot less risk.
Yeah, well, I'm not down on Larry Fitzgerald, but Joe does bring up an interesting point because he caught two touchdowns against the Niners in Week 5 and then not another touchdown for the rest of the year until Week 17, which doesn't matter for 90% of you. So that's something you have to keep in mind. But he led the league in catches. I'll take Larry Fitzgerald on my team every year. I play mostly PPR formats. I just like the fact that he can move the chains. I like in PPR leagues, I'm willing to sacrifice a few touchdowns, but I'll take the guys that have the ball in their hands that much. But on the Carson Palmer side of things, after Week 5 last year, he played really to a QB1. So that first 5 weeks was pretty rough. He had a lot of turnovers. I'm willing to take a little bit of a shot. But if you're in a one quarterback, 12-team league, Carson Palmer doesn't have to be on your radar. You don't have to get that cute and take Palmer with your first QB. If you want a second QB, I like him for upside. For instance, last year, I took Tom Brady in one league. I ate the four-game suspension and backed him up with Matthew Stafford because Stafford was actually ranked fairly low last preseason. I was willing to take that shot, and I pieced it together. It worked out perfectly. So you could do something like that with Palmer.
Oh, yeah. Look, as a second quarterback, he's absolutely fine. And, yeah, he's going to have some QB1 type games. I'm sure he's going to have enough of them this year, too, that he's going to still be fantasy relevant. But we also have to go back and look at the history of him, and we have to realize, too, that he's another year older and in an offense that's, you know, still, I think, going to be heavily David Johnson. And look, part of that's Palmer, too, in the passing game. We understand that. But this is a great year for quarterbacks. And I don't mean that just because you got the Mariotas and Winstons and Prescotts and some of the younger guys starting to push the older guys, but also because some of the guys like Cam Newton, who were this year, you know, I should say last year at this time, Cam Newton was a guy people were falling over themselves to get. And I'm not buying this whole, he's not going to run anymore. No way. Cam Newton is a complete egomaniac. He's going to run plenty, if not more. So I'm looking at, there's a lot of value on the board at quarterback, and I think a little bit of a safer floor for some of those picks you can make later on.
By the way, we didn't bury the lead on David Johnson. He's either the number one or number two pick in your draft, but he didn't play last night, and he shouldn't. We all know how good he's going to be. Joe and I'll be back for hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.